like to call the meeting of Hess together at 1:35. Four members are present, and I think we might have a fifth person on the phone. Has he phoned in yet? Senator Cowley? You don't have him yet. Okay, you can let us know when. At the present time, then, we have with us everyone except the one person online, Senator Dyson and the Vice Chair, Senator Thomas, and Senator Elton, myself, Betty Davis. I'd like to welcome all of you to the Hess meeting today, and I want to say to the members of Hess that we are glad to have you back in place, and I hope that we'll be able to do some real successful work towards making things better for people in the state of Alaska pertaining to all the issues that we're going to be addressing, in particular the health issues. And the bill that we have before us today, you've heard before. You do have your package in front of you, and the only difference in the bill and the one that we had last session was the fact that we did it at 175%. And now this bill is asking for 200%. Has he got online yet? Okay, we're going to go on with the meeting, and I'm sure that he'll say something when he gets in. And we do have a busy schedule, and the commissioner is here with us. Before we even read the, do you have time for us to read a statement before you speak?
Certainly.
Okay, then I'll call up Tom Overmeyer to give an overview of the bill, and then we'll hear from the commissioner.
Good afternoon. I'm Tom Overmeyer, legislative aide to Senator Davis. The sponsor statement for Senate Bill 212, which is an act relating to eligibility requirements for medical assistance for certain children, pregnant women, and providing for an effective date, reinstates the qualifying income standards for children and pregnant women receiving Medicaid benefits under the Denali Kid Care program to poverty guidelines used when the program was established in 1997 at the 200% federal poverty guideline for Alaska, reduced and frozen at 175% by the legislature in 2003. The equivalent income limits were reduced in the following 4 years to 154% by the time Senate Bill 27 was implemented last year to reinstate current levels of the federal poverty guideline at 175%. Children and pregnant women with household incomes between 176% and 200% of the federal poverty guideline still have not regained eligibility. Senate Bill 212 also increases allowable premiums or cost sharing by families whose incomes are between 150% and 200% federal poverty guideline. The fiscal notes, which are attached to your documents, anticipate 2% enrollment growth after 2009 and an annual cost increase of 8.6%, allowing for 5% medical inflation in Alaska. The $249,600 appropriation required for 2009 does not reflect the indirect savings by fewer emergency room visits and many avoided long-term illnesses for SCHIP children. The addition of one employee and office expense to $73,800 provides for the anticipated increase in enrollment of 218 pregnant women and 1,277 children. These essentially were the people that were eliminated when the guidelines were frozen. DHSS has requested additional support for Denali Kid Care in the governor's FY09 budget. 41 states allow participation by families at or above 200% federal poverty guideline, with many over 300%. The reason for higher SCHIP eligibility coverage in other states is that the federal government reimburses SCHIP at an enhanced rate, and higher SCHIP eligibility has proven to be an efficient use of health care dollars. While most patients enrolled in Medicaid are children, children utilize only a fraction of the resources. Early intervention and preventative care greatly reduce visits to emergency rooms and costly long-term illnesses. Hospitals regularly write off the cost of emergency room visits by non-emergency, low-income, indigent, or uninsured patients whom they must serve when patients cannot pay. The cost of these non-emergency visits to hospitals for SCHIP children and other low-income and uninsured who have no other way of obtaining health care are passed along an increased cost to patients who do not pay or are insured under private or state health benefit plans. There's no effect on the eligibility for Denali Kid Care if S-CHIP allotment is fully expended. If costs exceed available S-CHIP funds, claims are simply reimbursed at the lower regular Medicaid rate, resulting in reduced federal revenues.
Is that the
conclusion?
That's
the sponsor statement. Thank you.
I think we do have Senator Cogry on the line with us. Are you there? Senator Cogry?
Yes.
Welcome to the meeting, and we're glad to have you online.
Well, thank you.
You do have the package, right?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. At this time, we're going to ask the commissioner to come up and testify because she has another meeting that she has to attend, so we're going to give her that opportunity before we call on the rest of the speakers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Carlene Jackson, Commissioner for the Department of Health and Social Services. And I want to, first of all, thank Senator Davis and the committee for last year's bill that got us to 175% of poverty for Denali Kid Care. That was important, and we really appreciate those efforts. I also want to thank Senator Davis and Rod Beatty, who I know is in the audience behind me, for their work on the Health Council, the Governor's Health Care Strategies Planning Council, this last year. A lot of good work went into that, and one of the recommendations, if you haven't yet had a chance to see that report, was in fact to look at moving Denali Kid Care to the 200% of poverty level. There was a very limited amount of conversation about that because that was one of the recommendations that came at the very end of the very last meeting. So I know council members will be listening in and will be interested in the conversation that you have around the bill. Senator Davis had asked me if the governor had had a chance to really think about that recommendation and if I'd talked with her about it, and not in great detail. As I'm sure you've seen, she's been busy with mayors and other folks as the legislative session is going on in the last few days. When we did discuss the recommendations very briefly, her one question that she asked me was about the federal reauthorization of S-CHIP. And of course, that is at this point still in play. It's not something that's been resolved at the federal level. So, with that, I've got experts in the audience in terms of our Medicaid director, Jerry Fuller, who can speak to the fiscal note, our public assistance director, Ellie Fitzgerald, that can speak to details, and of course, Mr. Obermeyer did a great job also of fleshing out the issues. So I'm happy to answer any questions and thank the committee for wrestling with this issue because, as you've heard us say many a time, if we can spend our money on prevention, it saves us money on health care in other areas. So thank you, Senator Davis.
We thank you, Commissioner, for being here, and I'm sure many of the questions, if we have any, could be answered by your staff, and right. So you would not have to stay around if you feel that you need to go for your next meeting.
And I apologize. I'll stay as long
as I can. But
there's
a couple of hands, so we'll see what they have to say.
Sure.
Senator Dyson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Are you planning to pass this bill out today?
Well, it depends on. I would love to pass it out if we could, but if it's something you need to ask, go on and ask. Can't say for sure what's going to happen.
I mean, for me in this committee, this is the first I expect of a parade of folks who are wanting to increase expenditures for lots of good things. There's going to be a significant pressure upward on spending, and many of us believe that that may not be sustainable levels in starting 3 or 4 years from now. So it's going to be important for me to know, you know, where the administration is at on this right now small expansion in the budget, and but is this amount of money to cover this expansion in the governor's budget as submitted?
And through the chair, Senator Davis, and my staff can correct me or throw things at me if I'm wrong, but I believe that the money that we have in the budget is due to the S-CHIP federal issues and not an actual bump in the percentage beyond the raising us to the 175% of poverty. Am I right, guys? Yes. And so we don't, in the current governor's 09 operating budget, have an increase that would cover this bill. That would be part of a fiscal note should you pass that out. And part of the reason for that is exactly what you've said, and that was part of the conversation in the Health Council, that we need to be cautious, especially given the federal reauthorization and spending authority levels for S-CHIP, about what we do in moving forward. So our position at this point is to have the conversation and see where we are, but your concerns are valid.
All right. So I suspect that if you want the bill to pass, it will, and and maybe should, but.
You know, I'm willing for conversations to be held. My goal is to have this bill out as early as possible. We're on a 90-day session, and we do have to have things in place in order for us to meet the goal that we have to meet. I want, and I agree that, yeah, we should be concerned. I see this as an investment. I see that it's a part of the plan that the Health Council have asked, also Strategy Council have asked us to look into, and that we can't do anything better than to bring this bill forward at this time. Of course, even though it passed this committee, it's going to go to finance, and it will get its full hearing there. My concern is what the issues are that's in my committee, and it's not the finance itself. It's the services that we need to provide to our most vulnerable kids, our children. And so, you know, I don't know if the bill is going to pass out today. If it doesn't, we'll bring it back and get more discussion, but some of the concerns that you have can be discussed in finance and not in HES. Yes,
thanks, Senator. Madam Chair, and just before the commissioner leaves, because it would probably be an unfair question to ask of the staff, you noted that this was a recommendation by the task force that came at the very end. Then you noted you had a conversation with the governor,
mm-hmm.
Who indicated, who asked the question about the status at the federal level. But you sounded pretty positive in your testimony. I mean, am I to assume that beyond the question that the governor asked of you, the governor is supportive of this bill?
Through the chair, Senator Elton, I don't want to imply more support from the governor than there was. We had the conversation. She did not say, I absolutely support 200% of poverty. She didn't say, I absolutely hate 2% of poverty. Our conversation was around what's the federal environment and what are the overall recommendations that came out of the Health Council, of which there were several. And if you noticed in the governor's State of the State, when she mentioned the Health Care Transparency Act, there were a couple of recommendations from the council that she actually put into that act. This was not one of those, but that didn't mean this was dismissed. It was discussed as something worthy of further attention, but something that we really need to heed Senator Dyson's cautions on, because depending on what they do federally, the state cost for any kind of an increase could be greater than what it has been in the past if we don't have what we hope we get from the federal government's reauthorization.
Okay, Madam Chair, I just
yes.
would suggest, I mean, I agree with you that there is discussion that needs to occur on the budget, and it's probably appropriate to do that in finance, but I would just suggest to the commissioner that she try to nail down the governor's position, because, quite frankly, I'm not willing to go through a whole lot of work if she is not going to allow the bill to become law. We went through that experience last year on a couple of budget items. So I think it's probably appropriate for you as commissioner to have a conversation with the governor to see what she believes about the provisions of this.
And through the chair, Senator Elton, I hear what you're saying, and I think the dilemma is going to be part of her support or non-support is going to depend on that federal piece that's not yet decided. Should that be decided next week, then we can get an answer, I'm sure. Should it not be decided for the next 90 days, I don't know for sure that I can get you the answer you would like.
I think that might be, Madam Chair, just a comment, that might be difficult. My understanding is that there was a veto override scheduled for today. I think the President has vetoed this twice now. I think that this is an important issue. And I think that waiting to see what somebody else does is not necessarily what's best for the services that we provide to Alaskans. I'm hoping that we don't say, well, we can't make up our mind because we don't know what somebody else is doing. I think we can make up our mind based on what we think is right for Alaska and be ready if, in fact, we have the opportunity to provide the services.
Through the chair, thank you, Senator Elton. I appreciate your comments, and we'll pass them on. And again, I can't put words in the governor's mouth, and I agree with Senator Davis that this is probably an issue at that level that is appropriately discussed in the Finance Committee.
And Senator Elton, I thank you for your comments. I also would like to just add to that. I think it would not be fair to the governor at this point that we say, well, we want to hear if you're not going to veto this bill before we actually do the work that we need to do. I think we have to go about it and do the work that we have to do. And in all honesty, I have not had the opportunity to sit down and talk with the governor to see exactly where she is. And it's kind of early. Probably for her to say exactly where she's going to be on this. But do I think that she's going to veto this simply because The settlement has not come for the reauthorization of SCHIP. They have at least told us that the money will be in place for us to continue at the 175%, because there was the problem that it was going to go to the fact that the federal money would give out for us in March. But that's been resolved. Is that not right, Commissioner?
Senator Davis, I will have to defer to my staff to give you the details so that I don't speak incorrectly. So if
I'm not speaking correctly, when you do come forward, would you please correct me? Because all the communications that I've had and the meetings that I have attended, I have been told that the money is there to keep us at the 175%, because otherwise the state would have had to kick in money starting as of March. Is that not true? Okay, thank you very much. And so thank you for all your concern. I think we should move forward. And at this time, we'll let the rest of the administration come forward and speak.
Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Yes? Senator Calvin?
Senator Calvin?
Yes.
I have a couple of questions I'd like to ask.
Okay, you have it.
What would the eligible income level for a family of four be if this was to take effect?
I think we said it in the statement, but would you want to repeat that again for the senator?
I was just wondering what the eligible income level for a family of four would be if...
Senator Calvary, I hear your question. I'm calling up my aide to tell you what we... Do we have that?
The income level?
Yes. And if not, we have administration here that can speak to
the
it.
The administration may have to give
I thought you read it in your statement.
Well, no, it's not in the statement itself, but if we go to the 200% level, according to the federal poverty guidelines, it says up to $44,000.
For a family of four?
$53,000 for a family of four.
53?
That's what it's. These are as of January 23rd. It's the printout from the 2008 poverty guideline level.
Thank you, Mr. Overmeyer. I'll just let the administration speak to all that now that they have it in front of them.
Senator Davis, members of the committee, my name is Ellie Fitzgerald, and I'm the Director for Public Assistance. The poverty guidelines for 2008 have just been released, and one of my staff handed me a chart. The calculation shows that for a household of four, the 200% poverty level for annual income would be $53,000.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I have a couple more questions, if I should.
Okay, you may continue.
Yeah. In 2003, I think the legislature voted to change the eligibility from 200 to 175. During that time, I believe the administration told us that about 100 people would be affected by the change. Do you have any figures on how many people have been affected since 2003?
Senator Calgary, what they can give you is an update on what they have done with the 175% level that we just passed in last session. And I'm sure they have that information present.
Senator Davis, I do not have the exact numbers from the legislation that was passed last session that took effect July 1st in terms of enrollment. However, I did ask about them and was told we are on track and close with those projections, but I do not have the exact numbers, and we can get that information for you.
Okay, would you be able to answer the question that he asked about 2001? Because I was not on the committee in 2001, and I don't have that information.
Senator Davis, I don't have that information with me today, but we can certainly look back at enrollment numbers for the past 6 years to 2001 and get that information to you.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah. And let's see. Currently, they're talking about the disbursement of energy funds. I wonder how this would affect the income level. Would this affect the income level, or just how would we handle that?
Senator Cogry, would you repeat your question because I didn't understand the last part of your statement?
I said, what would be the effect if a disbursement of some energy rebates that's being talked about now, what would that affect due to the eligibility on the income level?
I'm not able to answer that question. Maybe administration can, but that's something that has not happened. I know they've been held harmless for permanent funds and other things that have money that have come in to people that are receiving welfare checks or whatever. Yeah. I don't know how that fits in with the eligibility for Denali Kid Care.
I think that would have to be some legislation to cover that if that happens. That's the reason I brought it up.
Senator Cowdery, through Madam Chairman, this is Ellie Fitzgerald again, and there is a proposal for an energy dividend. I believe the amount is $250 for Alaskans who have received permanent fund that's been introduced by, I believe, Senator Terrio and one or two other bill sponsors. The last time we looked at a similar provision last session, we determined that that money would not count towards Medicaid eligibility. It's deemed as a one-time payment and would not be considered in determining a person's eligibility for Medicaid. However, we can confirm that, and I can get that information back to members of the committee.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And that's all we need to know, because we should not be discussing bills that have not come before this committee.
I have no more questions at this time.
All right. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Administration may continue. Would you state your name for the record, please? Who's going to?
Yes. Madam Chair, Jerry Fuller, Medicaid Director. Thank you for letting us appear before you today. I thought I would start out with the federal scene, as confusing it as it is currently. Senator Elton mentioned a possible veto override that failed today on the House vote, so a true reauthorization of the federal SCHIP program isn't in the near horizon. But your previous statements, though, are correct. As best we can tell in our looking at the temporary extension of SCHIP through March 31 of 2009, there appears to be enough additional funding in there to hold the current Alaska Denali Kid Care program harmless, meaning that we don't anticipate having to drop to the Medicaid match rate. Having said that, though, the 2009 fiscal year runs through the end of June 2009. We have no way of projecting or predicting what might occur during that last 3 months. Thus, I believe within the fiscal note you see a small GF increase to try to cover that eventuality, whatever it might be. And then to stir the pot a little bit more at the federal level, as part of the stimulus package that's being proposed, debated, hammered out, one party wishes to do a temporary FMAP increase again, much like they did back, I think, in 03 or 04, a temporary boost of a couple of percentage points that at that time lasted 7 quarters. So that may be another wild card in this discussion, and at least with the stimulus package, everyone back east is saying they will have something out very soon, and so perhaps within a few weeks we'll know if there's actually going to be some relief along the lines of FMAP. So, you know, I wish I could report on the federal scene. It's all as well and stable, but it's probably as unstable as we could ever expect it to be around the SCHIP funding.
Right. We understand, and we thank you for that report. Was there any other thing that you wanted to bring forward?
No, I think the fiscal note is self-explanatory unless there's questions in that regard.
Is there any question for many of the members of the committee for Mr. Fuller or Ms. Fitzgerald?
Senator Davis, members of the committee, we do have a fiscal note for the eligibility piece of determining households' eligibility for Denali Kid Care. And as the sponsor statement indicated, it would require one additional position for that additional workload. That is also reflected in the fiscal note, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
All right, thank you. Any questions from the committee? Any questions from you, Senator Cogry? guess not, and thank you for your testimony of this completion of it. Is there anybody else from the administration to come forward? We do have a group of people that want to testify on the bill other than from administration. We could get started on that testimony at this time. Is there Brad Olds? And I guess that's online, rather. Brad Olds, Alaska Homes, Chow.
Yes, this is Brad Olds. Can you hear me, Madam Chair?
Yes, we hear you very well.
Thank you.
Would you state your name for the record?
I'm Brad Olds, Administrator for the North Star Behavioral Health Systems at the Palmer Residential Treatment Center. And North Star is also a member of the Alaskan Association of Homes for Children. North Star serves 124 Alaskan youth in psychiatric residential treatment centers within the state of Alaska, and 100% of our clients rely on DKC for payment of these services. In the beginning of the Denali Kid Care, we were, like most other states, using the eligibility standard of 200%. However, in 2004, legislative initiatives scaled it back to, of course, the 175 of the federal poverty level. The result of this action is that Alaska is now ranked the fourth lowest in the DKC eligibility rate in the nation. And this simply is not where we want to be. Alaska is missing out on federal funds to assist with the cost of DKC. Most importantly, my records indicate an estimated 3,500 children of working families have been cut from DKC and have no access to medical care. The Alaskan Association of Homes for Children supports the restoration of the DKC eligibility to the absolute minimum level of 200%. This simply makes sound fiscal policy. My message is please support Senate Bill 212 that will restore the DKC eligibility to 200. Thank you for your time.
Yes, thank you for your testimony. Any questions from the members? Yes, Senator.
Yeah, thanks for testifying, sir. I'm struck by your statement that these children have absolutely no access to medical care. Would you explain that, please?
In terms of the treatment that we provide for the emotional and behavioral challenges and the psychiatric needs here, many of these families do not qualify if they do not meet this standard. Private insurances will pay for only partial services, and the children that we are working with are severely impaired that require a longer-term intervention. So if a family is fortunate enough to have a private insurance that will cover it, that's okay, but unfortunately many do not.
Yeah, thank you. I thought you said, or I interpreted what you said, that they had no access, and now I realize you were talking about today. Just the care that your organization puts. Thank you.
Precisely. Thank you.
Are there any other questions? Yes, Thomas.
In response to, along that same line, when we have people that have insurance, but the insurance is has limitations.
Yes.
Covers percentages or covers a certain amount on an annual or lifetime basis. Do you have some concept of? You know how the two work together? How much ability there?
Yeah, I have an idea of that. Typically, I would say maybe 5% of our children's families from working families would have private insurance. So in my facility that serves 30 teenage boys, we typically have one or maybe two of those boys that the families have private insurance, and they typically will pay for. Typically, the maximum is 14 days, maybe 7 days, some up to 20 days. And then after that, the private insurance terminates, and we've exhausted their funding, and then it goes back to the DKC. Our average length of stay, and for most psychiatric level 5 facilities, is close to 10 to 12 months.
Thank you.
Certainly.
All right, thank you. If there's no other question, we thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
And before I call someone else up, I think I've made a mistake here by not adopting the present document in front of us. Would somebody please put a motion on the floor to accept 212 as our working document?
I would move that Senate Bill 212 be adopted as a working document.
Since no one object, we will move forward with 212 as our working document. Is there anyone in the audience that's going to be testifying that have not signed? Rather than just call everybody online, I'll ask for, I don't see a list of names of the people in the audience. Do you have that? You may just come forward and give your name for the record, whoever wants to come first. I don't have a list of names. Okay. Let's state your name for the record.
My name is Rod Beatty. I'm president and CEO of the Alaska Hospital and Nursing Home Association. The association has 37 members making up the hospital community, the nursing home community, assisted living, homes run by the state, and a variety of military facilities as well. Madam Chair, I'm here today to say that our entire membership is strongly supporting Senate Bill 212. We believe that moving it to the 200% of poverty level is the right thing for the state to do. As Commissioner Jackson said, I also serve on the Healthcare Strategies Planning Council, which concluded its business and submitted its recommendations just, I guess, about a week ago. And we did talk about it there. It did come up as a piece of business the final day that we met. In fact, I brought it forward to the group to seek their endorsement to support the state going to that level. While there wasn't a unanimous vote in support of that, there was a majority of members feeling that that was one of the steps the state could take as a package of recommendations to address the kind of health care concerns we have around kids in Alaska. As a former state health commissioner for 12 years and one who's kind of followed the health care debate on whether or not this is a good thing to do, aside from drawing in the federal money, do we really want to go to 200% of poverty as a threshold to cover kids to make sure that they have adequate care? It's been my conclusion over the years and all the literature that I've seen that we're talking about children below 200% of poverty and with the safeguards that are already in the program who otherwise don't have access to ongoing medical care through their parents' place of work. And that's a pretty stringent standard that this program has operated by, so that you don't end up with children simply moving from private coverage to public coverage, which is not what we're trying to accomplish at all. And unfortunately, there are many working parents who cannot obtain coverage through their employer or can't afford the coverage that we're talking about. And the 53,000 that you heard mentioned as the poverty level for a family of four for Alaska is a gross income figure. It's not a net income figure. So you have to keep in mind that that's not the available income to the family when all deductions are taken. So from our perspective, we think this is an appropriate step to take and would strongly support and encourage moving this bill out of the committee. And I'd be happy to respond to any questions.
Thank you very much for your testimony and the questions. Yes, Senator Thomas?
Along those lines, you know, when you mention a number, 53, 54,000, some people immediately say, gee, that sounds like those people should be more than able to take care. But as you said, it's a gross number. When you start taking expenses out of that and taxes, federal taxes, anyhow, things go downhill quickly. I think it would be helpful to at least have a little better handle on that type of information. I don't expect you to produce a bunch of charts or something that show income and deductions and et cetera, et cetera. But something that gives an indication, just like the last person that testified online anyhow, about what the potential stays are for some particular situations and the amount of money you're talking about that is regarding the treatment and care absent insurance. I think that would be helpful for some people that somewhat quickly dismiss the situation by saying, in this case, 200% of poverty level, $50-some thousand a year family. It doesn't seem that's reasonable. Seems like the state is, you know, going beyond its maybe potential capabilities to to supply that. So I think it would be helpful in the future as this bill moves forward to have people a little more aware of exactly what the end net result is of that kind of an income as well. So.
Through the chair, Senator, I think that's a good suggestion. It helps put it in context so people can see that this isn't just a discretionary out-of-pocket expense that people can routinely afford at that income level with all other mandatory expenses that they face. And so maybe I could work with the department to put some of that kind of material together. Be happy to do that.
It would help me. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Senator Elton, did you have your hand?
I did. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes.
That was an excellent point by Senator Thomas. And it may be helpful as you put those numbers together to also provide to the committee what the cost of hospitalization is. It doesn't take too many days in a hospital to get to tens of thousands of dollars in some cases. So that would be helpful also. What kind of a bite we're talking about for many of these families who are making a gross income of $53,000. But the other thing is, Senator Cowdery had asked a question earlier about how many people this might affect. And as I was going through the fiscal notes, I noted that because of the change in 2003, that over 2,500 children dropped out of the program, and about 400 or 500 pregnant women dropped out of the program. First of all, does that sound right, and would it be fair for us to infer that by going from 175 to 200% that we're probably talking about, half that number, maybe 1,500 children and pregnant women being added back in?
Through the chair, Senator Elton, I really hesitate to give you numbers because the department's in a better position to do that. But what happened in 2003 was a double whammy, you'll have to remember. It wasn't just going to 175% of poverty. It was freezing it at that level and not keeping it adjusted as the COLAs went up each year. So I think you saw a more dramatic decline in the number of kids covered than you would have if it had stayed just at 175% through that whole period of time. As far as what's the gap that we're going to close by going to 200% of poverty and the number of children that we're talking about, I've heard the number that you've talked about before as we talked about it in the Strategies Council, but I'd hesitate to say that I could attest to that because I really don't have the data to do that.
Okay. Thanks, Madam Chair.
You're quite welcome. I'd just like to also add to the statement that even though we were supposed to be at 175%, we had eroded to 153 or 156. So then we do have those numbers of how many children we would have brought back on to the service when we passed the bill at 175. And I can get that information for you. And the administration can also probably speak to it if they would desire to do so. Thank you for your testimony. Thank you very much. Is there a Jordan Nigro in the audience? Would you come forward, please?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much for this opportunity. My name is Jordan Nigro, and I'm the Residential Services Director for Juno Youth Services. I'm also here on behalf of two statewide organizations, the Alaska Association of Homes for Children, which you heard mentioned earlier, and the Alaska Behavioral Health Association. We believe that raising the Denali KidCare eligibility rate to 200% of federal poverty line would allow more children in Alaska to receive proper health care, including behavioral health services. Children who have no health insurance often do not get needed preventative care, causing them to have more physical and or emotional problems later in life, which can then cost the state as well as private businesses financially when these youth later end up in hospitals or jails due to not getting the needed services when they were youngsters. Denali KidCare is the primary method of payment for behavioral health care in the state of Alaska, and it is critical to the success of Bring the Kids Home, a statewide initiative which I'm sure you have all heard of, which is gaining a lot of momentum right now and serves to work with youth here in the state where their support systems are. At this time, Alaska has the fourth lowest eligibility rate in the country, something we should not be proud of. A passage of Senate Bill 212 would send the message that we truly care about the kids of our state and believe that all children should have access to health insurance. At Juno Youth Services, approximately 70% of the youth that we serve as an entire agency received Denali KidCare. If the eligibility rates were raised, we'd be able to see more youth who right now we have only a small number of non-funded spaces available, so we could see more kids if that eligibility rate was raised. In closing, I just would like to tell a story of a young man who came to my office just last week who's about to turn 18 years old and has been through many of our services. And he came in to tell me that he'd been sober for 13 months. He's in the process of looking for a job. He's done with high school. He's really excited to get out on his own. And he's still receiving therapy and chemical dependency services through Juno Youth Services, which he would not be able to do without Denali KidCare. And I don't believe he would be sober or successful or where he's at in his life right now without Denali KidCare. So I would like you to urge you to pass this bill, and I'm thankful to be here. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you for your testimony. Any questions? Yes, Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. It's my understanding from talking to some of the folks in corrections and stuff that about 60% of the kids that are in the youth facilities around the state have mental, emotional, behavioral issues. Is that a number that...
I would say that's probably a good statistic through the chair.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm going to call at this time Megan Johnson. Is there Megan Johnson online?
Hi, this is Megan. Thank you, Madam Chair, Megan. Members of the committee, okay. For taking this time. My name is Megan Johnson.
Thank you.
And I am the chair of a statewide child and youth advocacy coalition called Voices for Alaska's Children and Youth, or VACY for short. We kind of consist of a group of representatives from public and nonprofit organizations throughout Alaska who are all caring for children and youth on anywhere from health issues, mental or physical, education, overall wellness and protection concerns having to do with children and youth. So on behalf of VACY and the members and the 1,800 uninsured children that in some form one of our agency probably cares for, we really think it's time for Alaska to step up to the plate and not be one of the last states to join the movement to really ensure the health care of universal, continuous, affordable, effective, preventative, and sustainable health care for all children, which were recommendations actually made by the National Academy of Sciences in moving the health care for all by 2010 forward. So we kind of think that there's no time like the present to prepare Alaska for the future and really see some connections with having to support health care for children and the future for Alaska. We have multiple employment opportunities in the works. And in order to have a sustainable workforce, we need a healthy workforce. And there's a lot of connections between having a healthy, reliable workforce and the quality of work and the sustainability of that work. We all know we have huge retention and recruitment issues across multiple job markets, which cost us all a lot more money in the end. And I kind of want to think of this from an educator standpoint, which is my primary profession, and think about it that we really need to take care of Maslow's basic level of human needs of health and safety. And if individuals don't have access to this level, they can't move toward meeting social self-esteem and self-actualization needs. And I feel sometimes we're not living in a third world country, but at times it feels like we are, especially if we're talking about this basic level. And that perhaps we should think about healthcare being a human right, not a privilege. The current Senate Bill 212 would greatly support the future and well-being of Alaska. These families are working and trying to make ends meet and doing a good job at it. But they need to stay healthy. Their children need to stay healthy so that they can stay in school and so they can retain their jobs. Not only do they need to continue their own personal integrity, but retention and recruitment costs in Alaska are ludicrous. We need to put Alaska first and build sustainable quality and health workforce. Healthy equals sustainable, which then equals quality. So this issue of health insurance for children has a much bigger trickle effect than just having healthy children. I urge many of you to support the current efforts you're moving towards to move it to the 200% poverty level. And thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Are there any questions? Yes, we have Senator Thomas that would like to ask a question.
Just try and keep mine short anyhow. As an educator, how effective are we in identifying at an early stage when maybe the treatment or intervention might be most effective? How effective are we at identifying those problems, particularly through the schools and through parents?
Well, every state is mandated to have some child finds. Mandates and practices in place, and some of that is taking place through local infant learning programs throughout the state, which we have 18 of, the WIC, various health care organizations. I know there's some new programs with some of the local health care providers to actually do developmental screenings to identify these kids, which is part of that child find situation. But we also have a current eligibility to qualify kids for early intervention services. You have to have a 50% delay in one area. So that means you need to be pretty severe to qualify for those services. So there are a lot of children that are falling through the gap, and with a state having the highest rate of abuse and neglect pretty much in the country, we tend to wobble between 1 and 2 and maybe 3 sometimes, but generally pretty high. We're missing a lot of those kids that cognitively on thinking skills and motor skills are showing up just fine, but on language and social emotional development are truly struggling, and if may not show up at a 50% delay, and as many of the other organizations testified, having to do with behavioral health, they're not getting them till they're later and they're older, which, as we all know from birth to 6, is probably the most critical time in a human brain development. So we're missing this huge window.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Megan, for your testimony.
Thank you very much.
All right. Is there anyone else in the audience that plan to testify? Would you come forward, please? State your name for the record.
Good afternoon, Madam Chairman. For the record, my name is Karen Robinson, and I'm here speaking on behalf of the Alaska Women's Lobby. And just wanted to put on the record that we strongly support this bill, and this has been our number one priority to get the Denali Kid Care back up to the 200% of the poverty level since the day it was cut. And I believe it's one of the most important things that we can do as a government is to care for our children and our pregnant women. And I think it's also really important for people to remember that for many families, you know, this is just a moment in time. You know, this is not a program that most families go on for long periods. This is during a family's time that they might be in crisis and need the care, whether it's mental health care. And, you know, just sitting here thinking, I kind of thought around the building, and I think people need to understand that it's not just, you know, families maybe that are poor that you don't know, that I know of 10 families right here in this building who have utilized this service, and our children have utilized this service, and it has made a tremendous difference. I'm one fortunate grandmother that my son and his wife were able to utilize this service, and during a time where they were running a small business, had no insurance, and thank goodness that it was there, because my grandson ended up being breached, and what was perceived as going to the birthing center and maybe not having a high cost ended up being around $35,000 just for the hospital stay for a couple of days, and really made a difference in giving them a better head start in being parents instead of having to be burdened with this huge cost at the beginning of being parents. And so I just really encourage you to continue to move forward to assist the families in this state to have both the mental health and the medical care that they need. And again, remember, you know, they don't stay on it forever. They come in a period of time to get the assistance, and as things improve and their children get better, or the pregnancy has ended and they get on insurance, they move on. And it's just a time to help when they're in crisis. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Any questions? I'd like to call on Larry Weiss, Alaska Public Policy. Larry Weiss, are you there?
Yes. This is Larry Weiss. Hello?
Yes.
Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to testify. And if my expected phone gets in the way, I can call in on another one.
Okay.
But, people have spoken eloquently to the issue of how important it is to provide health care for Alaska's children. I wanted to approach it from a little bit different angle. There was a wonderful study done in 2002 called The Economic Impact of the Medicaid Program on Alaska's Economy. And that study, by the way, desperately needs to be updated. But at that time, the researchers showed that Medicaid as a whole, and of course, Denali Kid Care is a part of that Medicaid, contributed over $1 billion to the Alaskan economy. It contributed over 9,000 jobs and income to those people of about $0.33 billion. And the Department of Labor publishes here in Alaska a publication called Alaska Economic Trends. In the next month or two, there will be an issue of Alaska Economic Trends that focuses on healthcare in Alaska. And what we're going to see once again, as we have seen for the last 15 or 18 years, that healthcare in Alaska is an immense driving force. It's the driving economic force. It's the fastest growing industry for 15 or 18 years in Alaska. And within that, of course, Medicaid has been a fantastic driving force, as I indicated with the study that was done in 2002. So Medicaid, it is an extraordinary bargain for the state as an investment. With the federal matching funds, for every dollar that the state of Alaska spends, there's more than a dollar match from the Fed. And if the child is a native child, then the Feds pay the entire thing. We don't pay a penny. The average Medicaid cost per year in Alaska per child is about $3,800. And there are about 21,000 uninsured kids in Alaska right now, most of whom would qualify at the 200% level, the FPL level. At a time when we hear in the news that we are headed into a recession, I just heard this in the last couple of mornings on the news, this is a great opportunity for the state to contribute heavily to our economy using mostly federal dollars. To me, it's an extraordinary, think about that, more than 100% return on the state's dollars. I can't think of too many investments we make that are that good. Not to mention the fact that we're talking about the health of children. So thank you very much for giving me this opportunity to present.
And thank you. Are there any questions of Mr. Weiss? If there's no questions, we will now go to Naomi Neidner. Naomi?
This is Naomi Neidner. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm also with the Alaska Association of Homes for Children, and as well as I'm Program Development Director for Presbyterian Hospitality House. It's located in Fairbanks, Alaska. I'm here to support the 200% level of a poverty level. I believe it's imperative, as I could echo everyone else's previous comments in regards to being able to reach as many of the children in the state as we can. And the programs we run in Fairbanks, similar to Juno Youth Services, the majority of our clients are come into state custody when we receive them into our homes. Although with the new Bring Your Kids Home, we do have several that are now coming from services provided out of state, and they're coming here with not being custody of the state, and their only means to have the services provided is through a Denali Kid Care. So many of the youth that we see from the villages, this is their first time they've had opportunity to have medical services. They desperately need the preventative checkups, not only for medically, but also behaviorally, as most of our clients are severely, emotionally disturbed, and a good amount of them are diagnosed as FASD. It is just, to me, so important that we, as a state, provide these services to our youth, and as Commissioner Jackson mentioned earlier, that preventative, I think, in the end, will save our state so much more money. Not only the money portion of it, but also provide just a much more healthier life for young children and young adults or young youth. And again, I would just like to support the Senate Bill 212, and thank you so much for the opportunity to speak to you today.
And thank you very much. Are there any questions? Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to testify for 212 or against 212? There's one other person. We have Lori Morris.
Yes, Madam Chair, members
yes.
of the committee. My name is Lori Morris, and I'm the president of the Alaska Association of Homes for Children. Our association represents 20 organizations throughout the state that provide behavioral health services to children and their families. And of course, we're here today to testify in support of Senate Bill 212. At inception, Alaska joined most states and set the eligibility level for Denali Kid Care at 200% of the federal poverty line. However, in 2003, as discussed before, a legislative initiative scaled back eligibility. In addition, eligibility was converted from a percentage of the federal poverty line to a hard number limit. Last year, the legislature converted eligibility back to a percentage of federal poverty line, but failed to restore the eligibility rate to a minimum of 200%. The result of this inaction is Alaska is the fourth lowest Denali Kid Care eligibility rate in the nation. Our association supports the restoration of Denali Kid Care eligibility to a minimum level of 200% of the federal poverty line. We believe this is a sound fiscal policy as the federal government covers a large portion of the cost. In addition, children without health care get less preventative care, have much higher health risk, and are four times more likely to use expensive emergency room care. Please join the Alaska Association of Homes for Children in support Senate Bill 212 that will restore Denali Kid Care eligibility to 200% of the federal poverty line. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Are there any questions? That completes all the testimony that I have. Is there anyone else in the audience that want to testify or anyone online? I hear no one coming forward. At this time, 212 we have in front of us. I'm pleased with the testimony that we're receiving. I want to thank again all the people that took the time to come and testify and those that are in the audience listening to us. I know that this is an important piece of legislation that need to move forward. I am not going to call for a vote to move it forward today, but I am going to bring this bill back before us as a previous heard bill on Friday. I do have a meeting on Friday. There is no other testimony to be taken today for any other bills. If there is comments to be made by the members of my committee, I'd like to hear them now.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
I'd like to know what else we will have up Friday. Do you know yet?
We do have the transparency bill from the governor. I think it's coming. 245.
Thank you.
That is the bill for next Friday.
Thank you.
And we would like for all of you to be present so we can move forward on that bill also. Senator Cogry, you're online still?
Yeah.
Would we?
Hello.
Do you have any statement that you'd like to make or any comments?
Well, it's good to be back and listen to a little testimony.
Yes. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
It is my desire to bring this bill back on Friday.
I'll be here.
All right. Thank you. If there's nothing else to come before us, I'd like to adjourn at this time at 2:35. Meeting is adjourned.